What's up, nerds? We're your hosts. I am Chad.
And I am Jake. This is our weekly podcast where we explore the world of nerd from TV, movies, games, comics, news, and books.
We will give you our opinions, theories, and oftentimes spoilers.
We will also have friends and experts as guests on the show to elaborate further on those topics.
But be prepared. We like to have a few drinks, so buckle up.
If you want to support our show, like, share, and subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
You can also become a premium subscriber over at buymeacoffee.com/allthingsnerd.
So let's get into it. This is the All Things Nerd Podcast. Nerd. Welcome, nerds, to the All Things Nerd Podcast, your weekly dive into all things nerd. Chad, I hope you had a good week. And with that, let's jump into our guest segment. But first, cheers.
All right, everyone. We want to introduce to you all our guest this week. He is a professor of political science at Marymount Manhattan College, and the author of several books, including the book we are here to discuss with him, is A Cultural History of the Punisher. Please welcome Kent Worcester. Kent, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So, Kent, thank you for joining us on the podcast. It is our tradition to do a cheers in before we get into the thick of it. If you don't want to, you don't have to join in, but cheers.
Cheers, Ken.
Cheers. Okay.
All right. So tell us about yourself. Who are you and why the Punisher? And also tell us briefly about this book.
Well, I don't want to go into too much background, but I think it's kind of interesting. I grew up in a world where I wasn't really allowed to read comics except for comic strips in the newspaper, which I loved. But Mad Magazine was banned in my house and so on and so forth. And I've always had a kind of almost, you know, illicit fascination with drawn images and with things my parents didn't want me to read. And there was some of that with the story of my relationship with the Punisher. I arrived in New York in 1983. I had been living in Cleveland. And Cleveland was a tough city, but New York was even tougher. I drove into the city in August 1983. And there was just such a... well, let's put it this way. I started to read comics as a kind of escape from graduate school a few years later, and I came across the Mike Baron run. And I thought it would make it a really interesting character to write about, right? I mean, this is 35 years ago. Yeah. But the key point was that everything we were talking about in graduate school was interesting, but it had nothing to do with the politics in New York City in the 1980s. And Mike Baron's run seemed more connected to how people were talking about crime and politics and how the city was shifting than anything I was learning in the classroom. So I think of the Punisher as a kind of alternative means of understanding the world we live in, you know, a kind of unconventional way of understanding the world we live in. He's a kind of refraction. And I just wallowed in it for several years writing the book.
Heck yeah. So then a follow-up question to that is, we ask all of our guests on the show, what got you into like the nerd world? And do you have a favorite hero outside of the Punisher, if the Punisher is your favorite?
That's a good question. I mean, I think I was always a bit nerdy. And again, it was partly the whole how much popular culture was kind of censored in my world. So, for example, my brother and I were allowed to watch, when we were quite small, we were allowed to watch an hour of TV a week. And that hour would be Star Trek.
Star Trek, yes.
So I think that's possibly the starting point. But I can't explain why, you know, old movies pulled me in, old monster movies. Friends of mine at school in eighth, ninth grade would talk about how stupid 50s movies were, and I found them absolutely enthralling. You know, when a crab crawls out of the edge of a beach, just put me in
Yeah.
that cinema seat and leave me alone and let me watch the crab monster get the romantic couple.
I love that. And then do you have a favorite hero? It doesn't have to be a superhero, but outside of the Punisher, I don't know if the Punisher is your favorite, but outside of the Punisher, do you have a favorite and why?
I would say with the Punisher, I think even people who love the Punisher have an ambiguous relationship to the Punisher. I mean, I think that even the most diehard fan will have to acknowledge that some stories are just completely gruesome, and that this character takes things way further than even the angriest real person would ever want to take things. So there's an edge to the character that I find absolutely fascinating, and I will always buy Punisher stories. But to say he's a favorite, it's hard to say. Let's put it this way. I generally prefer Marvel to DC. I might as well lose some readers right there. And that's it. I'm not getting that guy's book. And I genuinely prefer the kind of gritty urban corner of the Marvel universe. So if I'm in a store, let's say I'm in Forbidden Planet and there's no Punisher, I'll look for a Daredevil. I'll look for a Spider-Man. I'm interested in the city. I was taking my stepkids a few years ago to see the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. And Reese said, do you have any of the comics? And I thought about it and I was like, no, it's in space. It's not New York. I enjoyed the movie, but it didn't make me want to read about their adventures in space.
That's awesome. I love that. I
I
think
mean, to understand this book, you have to understand that it's about New York City. And there are plenty of people for whom New York City is an interesting subject. This is just an unusual way of talking about the last 50 years of New York City history. And one of the points I make is that almost everybody who writes about the Punisher writes about him as a Vietnam vet. But very few of his stories are set in Vietnam. Far greater number are set either in New York or in big cities that are reminiscent of New York, right? And the issue of American foreign policy represents a tiny fraction of Punisher stories. And the issue of crime, street crime and mob-led crime, represents half the stories. I mean, I'm pulling that number out of my head, but I have read them, so I think it's close. So I don't know how to re I know how to I think I know how to reach comic book readers, right? Like, we the publisher and I put an ad on in the Comics Journal, and I'm doing podcasts such as this, and this is by far the most important of them, and I think I know how to reach comics fan, and I've been a comics reader since the 80s. I was looking for that escape from graduate school, but I have no idea how to reach people who are interested in New York and who don't know that this is an incredible way of telling the story of the recent history of New York, or one person's version of the history of New York.
Right. And speaking on that, in the preface of this book, you touch on like the memories of the Upper West Side and like Big Apple Comics and Happy Burger specifically, places where you would go to have like conversations and discourse that, kind of like took its roots while debating what you read and what you were looking into. And so do you think places like that are kind of like the foundation of landscapes of cities and communities over like, the more cliche, like Starbucks and generic retailers and things like that to where like the local environment almost feeds more into those conversations because you can relate to the landscapes around you?
That's an interesting question. I mean, there are things about the Upper West Side that have changed profoundly, and I gesture towards that. I mean, the crime and that side of things is of course one of them. But some of the eccentricity has been squeezed out by high rents. I remember there used to be a store in the 90s in Columbus that was called Opera and Comics. And he sold opera CDs, opera sheet music, and superhero comics in just big piles. And that kind of just idiosyncratic vision is harder to find. And some of it's retreated to the outer boroughs or further out in search of cheap rent. But it's still a 24-hour city, and it's still a city wrestling. I mean, let's put it this way. It's a city where crime not only dropped under, say, Giuliani and Bloomberg, but then it just stayed low until COVID, right? I mean, all during de Blasio. And you might say, well, de Blasio did this right or Bloomberg did that right. It doesn't matter. The crime rate was sort of astonishingly low. And then COVID knocks it up. And within the publication of the first like quarterly report on the murder rate, and there's a tick up, and people are like, oh my God, it's the 70s. The 70s are back. You know, the scars are so deep that the trigger is just a feather, right? It's a hair. It's like, oh my God, bam, the city's back to where it was. So I'm interested in kind of rhetoric and reality and the way in which our rhetoric shapes reality and the way in which reality itself does have its own. There are actual facts, and you know, fewer people, far fewer people are going to die at gun or knife violence at the hands of people, strangers or neighbors or family, in 2024 than in 1979 or 1989. But how we talk about it is not necessarily an exact reflection of what's actually happening. So I think those terrors are part of the story.
Oh, this
It's
is
part of
kind
the
of.
story of the Punisher, right? I mean, it's part of the story of New York, and it's part of the story of Punisher. And I'm not sure there's any character in literature, not just comics, who captures, I mean, you have to go maybe to Death Wish, Paul Kersey, but a character who captures that kind of New York drama.
Yeah, I think you kind of answered this already a little bit, but I'm going to ask it anyway because we have it written down. But
Okay.
so through your understanding and research, how do you feel about Frank Castle becoming such a cornerstone in the Marvel comic and graphic novel world so quickly, despite being of like a brutal vigilante, compared to many of our, you know, the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and stuff like that. And then how do you think this changed comics and storytelling in general through that medium?
Well, you know, it does take 10 years for the character to go from being trigger happy to being grim and gritty. It's that crucial Steve Grant, you know, Circle of Blood limited series that recasts the character. And I think it does in an interesting way. I mean, I was in a way surprised how interesting the story of Circle of Blood is, how much it is part of the story of comics in the 80s, that we don't talk about it alongside Watchmen or Dark Knight. But to take a character who had been that kind of that badly treated, right? You know, he's shooting at cabbies. He's this sort of stick figure for Spider-Man to make fun of, right? Like, you got problems, Buster. And then to take this character and to say, no. He takes it seriously. He takes himself seriously. The world he lives in justifies his anger. And then he runs into a conspiracy, which is weirder than he can imagine. And I think Stephen Grant solved, I don't want to say he solved the problem, but he's one of the writers like Barron, like Ennis, who found a way of taking a character who's in a very tight little knot, right? I mean, he's very constrained. You know, he doesn't have powers. He's always going to shoot. He's ridiculously angry. So he's there's so many things that are pre-given. And you have a small number of writers who found a way of making it very fresh. And Grant's way, I think, is one of the interesting ways, because what he did was he took this character who's very two-dimensional and put him in this three-dimensional world, and he's like, I don't want to know that. I just want to know who the villain is. And the warden's like, no, it's more complicated. They're ordinary, they're respectable citizens. And, you don't really understand what's going on. And the Punisher's like, I don't want to know about Gray, damn it. I just think that's a, intrinsically interesting use of the character. The angry man who comes up against something he can't quite understand. I think there's a lot of mileage in that. But for Marvel, of course, the character is so problematic because of the appropriation by the far right. That Unite the Right rally must have been just absolutely shocking for people in Marvel. Because you have, we shall not be replaced, and the this group and that group shall not replace us with Patches, Frank Patches.
Oh, we got a. There's a question later on
And
in
let's just say that
that.
is why he's in the transdimensional realm, right? I
Yeah.
mean, that's where you send a character to depoliticize him.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean he's a political character? He's surrounded by monsters. He's in a green goo environment.
Yeah. Fuck, man. Yeah.
New York City?
I'm not gonna do
There's
it.
no New
No, I'm
York
gonna wait.
City in this
Well,
story.
okay, I'm gonna do it. I'll just do
Yeah,
it.
please.
So this was a question that we had for later, but
We
you're
have
kind of getting there
progression
already. Yeah.
there, so
So,
yeah.
as a, so I'm just reading it from how
Sure,
we have it
please.
written down, but as a follow-up to that, how do you feel, what are your thoughts on the logo change recently because of the right making the Punisher symbol like such a right-wing
Look.
thing? Like, how do you, and then they change the symbol now, and then the right wing, being so against it. Like, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel moved. I don't want to be moved by or against the right. I don't want them in my head in that way. I don't want to like his logo because the right doesn't. You
Right.
know, I hate that kind of lack of independent thinking,
Do
really.
you think that?
I think Marvel overproduced Punisher comics. I think Marvel kind of blundered into this over a period of decades, right? Where they take a character who is just so intense, so he is such a the phrase I use in the in the introduction is that he pushes open the Overton window, right, of what's acceptable. Okay, so what is the Punisher's answer? Shooting people. How many people? Tens of thousands. Okay. And he's on the cover of a comic that's being sold to all ages audience. Yes. So I think that little nutshell thing, Marvel pump out, especially late 80s, 90s, pump out Punisher stories. And sometimes it's not even stories. Think about the 10 issues of the Punisher Armory, right? Which might have, I think, be sold. I don't remember it saying for mature audiences. Maybe it did. But so a company that produces a comic book that offers survivalist instructions in how to amass weapons of mass destruction in your basement, and then they're sort of surprised that the character is adopted by people who are angry at the government. So, it's fascinating to me how much of an outlier he is, that you have a character like the Hulk who symbolizes anger, and you can sell his t-shirts to 8-year-olds, and it doesn't matter because the Hulk is such a kind of fantastical character, right? I mean, he's green and he's big. But when you're selling 8-year-olds t-shirts of the Punisher, you're not just selling a kind of like cartoon version of a kind of like cathartic anger. You're, in a way, I think, encouraging that anger. And I don't feel at all kind of censorious or ooh, tisk tisk Marvel, but I do think there is an irony in this story.
Yeah. Do you think that the changing of the logo pushes
Oh,
that
right, the
character?
logo.
Yeah, do you
I
think
think
that
that's
that
that.
change, do you think it pushes the character for better character development that he's changing it, or do you think that that should be left alone?
I think it's the usual Marvel lane bullshit.
Yeah.
It's such a wonky image. I mean, I recognize that my aesthetics are not the aesthetics of the sort of mass comics audience. I find the the look of the Baron and through the Ennis run. I actually think a lot of the Punisher's been well drawn, well executed. In general, the fantasy, the Frankencastle, the Doctor Strange issues, those are probably some of my least favorite Punisher issues.
Do you like the new logo, or are you, yeah,
It just
not feeling it?
feels like a corporate effort to depoliticize a character, and that it's too late. The horse fled the barn.
Yeah.
Civil society now owns the character. Marvel, I think Marvel's going to profit from back issues, right? Trade paperbacks and so on and so forth. But I think it's going to be a long time before that character can be used in the way he was used in the mid-80s.
That that's something that I notice in the book is you talk about kind of like the rise of the Punisher being on the same at least time frame of
Absolutely. In
frame.
tandem would be the way to put it, right? It's like in parallel, the crime rate and the Punisher success go up and up, and then the crime rate peaks. It stays sort of at about, I don't know, 1,700, 1,600 murders through the early 90s, and then it drops, and the character doesn't change because those decades have established a certain kind of character, a certain kind of traumatic response, right? He's living in a world where 1,500 or more New Yorkers are dying a year as a result of gun violence,
Right.
right? And so when it goes down to 400, he's still acting like it's, some kind of a absolute urban emergency.
but like
Sorry.
on no.
Have a lot of opinions about the Punisher.
Oh, I
That's what we want.
that
That's
is
what we
what we
want.
want. But in the book you reference, kind of like the simultaneous a rise of like Reaganism and the Punisher both kind of symbiotically growing.
And I think we forget how much Reagan's election in 1980 is about crime. Yeah. I mean, part of what we're talking about is just how sophisticated the audience has gotten, right? I mean, in a way, that's what we don't talk about enough is the audience. And, Marvel has to kind of keep up with the audience, right? Especially nowadays, they make some move with a character and 100 podcasters are dissecting it.
Fans are a tough crowd.
Yeah.
Tough crowd.
Yeah. And also, the character is harder, I think, to write now because in the 80s and early 90s, there was a sense of urgency. I think Marvel in the 80s and early 90s, because the crime peaks around in New York around 1990, 91, and it remains quite stubbornly high through the first half of the decade. So that 10-year period, 85 to 95, is the kind of golden age for the Punisher. Notice that's the period in the early 90s where there are five Punisher titles being published a month. It's astonishing, right? Given that character, how inflexible he is. Of course, one of them is 100 years in the future, right? In the armory, so there's no character in that. But it's five titles. And I don't know where I was going with that, but oh, I know that when you're in that 10-year period, 85 to 95, you don't have to motivate the reader or the character. It is absolutely a kind of membrane between entertainment and the society, right? You're reading about rising crime. Frank Castle is dealing with rising crime. It's, you're watching the local news. Frank Castle's reenacting the local news, but with a better ending.
Yeah. You pick up the newspaper and then you pick up a comic the next day. Yeah.
And by the time you get to Bernie Getz on the subway, it's like, wait a minute, am I reading the comic or am I reading about a guy named
Anonymous.
Bernie Getz?
I love that comparison. I've never heard that before. I love that.
I'll let you in on a secret. I'd moved to New York in 83. Getz's attack is what, 84, 85? I forget which. I'm blanking, but it's right there in the mid 80s. And he and I at the time were dead ringers for each other. I got free drinks because people thought I was Bernie Getz, and I was like, I'm not Bernie Getz. And people would be like, no, I'm giving you a drink. And I once got a free cab ride. He was like, Mr. Getz, I kid you not. And I was listening in the late 80s, a couple years later, to Jane's Addiction's Nothing Shocking, which is a pretty intense album, on headphones on a Walkman with a tape going through Times Square. And a young guy was saying, Getz, you're a dead man. You're a dead man. And I'm listening to this like album, like, whoa, Perry Farrell. And I noticed that people around me are kind of a little like nervous. So I take off my headphones and I'm like, Getz, you're a dead man. And yeah. So again, the absolute gap between what we were studying and writing about and what our exams were about and what was motivating people in the actual city. And there's the book.
That I mean, every aspect of that is
Horrible, boring.
not boring, definitely not
the
boring.
opposite of boring. I mean,
I'm a
incredibly.
pessimist, which is one reason I love the character.
I mean, sad, but I get it. Like, it makes sense for the character.
Have a story for you. I think you might find it entertaining.
Please, and
And I
thank
haven't
you.
told it before. I was writing the conclusion.
Have you said that too first? Because you said that we're the most important,
Oh
so
yeah, you are. That's why you love the
I'd be
story.
the pessimist here.
So,
I know Alan's important, but
no, I was writing the conclusion. I find conclusions difficult, and I suddenly realized, oh my God, I'm just surrounded by blood. I have been reading for 4 years. I have been reading paperback novels from the 70s and 80s. I've been watching crime films from the 70s and 80s. I've been reading, there's roughly 1,000 Punisher stories to read, but I figure I'd read another couple thousand of Batman and Fool Killer and Daredevil and, stories set in New York or stories with intense, sort of violent-oriented characters. And I was like, oh my God, this is too much. This is just beginning to infect my, nighttime, right? I'm dreaming about, urban New York in the 70s. And so with a friend, I started watching studio era film musicals. And I found that Judy Garland was the safe
Oh.
space that my soul needed after 4 years of Frank Castle.
That's amazing. I love Judy Garland.
Oh yeah, she's
Do you
I mean,
think?
the worst thing about Garland is how people fixate on the Wizard of Oz, and that's like the least interesting part of her story. So
Yeah.
she'd already done a whole bunch of interesting movies.
Yeah. My
And
mom was a big fan and I saw a lot of Judy Garland
I
growing
mean,
up.
we're both from Minnesota.
Oh, I thought you were going to say from The Enchanted. What's the name of the place she goes to? The fantasy land. Oz. I thought you were going to say we're
Oh.
both from Oz.
Yeah, we're both from Oz. I do have a tattoo of the Wizard of Oz, but we won't get into that because it's degenerate.
No, but it is striking how if you spend your time in, say, let's say 80s, 90s pulp culture, right? I read all the Death Wish books, all the Dirty Harry books, right? Some of them are novelizations, but there's like 10 Dirty Harry books where he's just doing stuff, right? He's going camping and he suddenly has to kill people. It's like, well, I thought I got away from this. You go back to the culture of the 30s and 40s, and they're bottling all that stuff up, right? They are not talking about themselves the way that the culture does in the 80s and 90s. I mean, there is just such a emphasis on, everybody being happy
Are
is let's say in things like musicals. So it is a yin yang situation. I have both sides as a nerd. Is I can watch something from the 30s or 40s where it's just so sweet and it's so patriotic and it's so wholesome and eat it like vanilla ice cream, and then read a or watch a violent movie. And
Or do you think that are you working on anything else,
I'm working
or
on a
can...
book on the musicals. On
Oh, really? So you're literally
no,
going to the other side.
yeah, no, I'm
Okay.
sorry to say, I think The Punisher is my last sort of comics related thing.
That's yeah.
Why are you apologizing?
Well, let's put
Yeah.
this way. As a kid, I was into movies before I was into comics. And as a kid, I was sort of, even then, I was intimidated by just how many books there were on movies. And I will say that once I got tenure and I thought, well, what do I really want to write about? And I thought, comics. Part of the appeal was that there hadn't been enough. Right?
Yeah.
And that, you look at your own bookshelf in 2000, right? Or 2002. And it's like, man, there's not that many good books. I mean, yeah, there's some coffee table books. And Jules Feiffer writes this delightful book about superheroes in 1965. But that bookshelf I had was pretty small. And I wanted to contribute to that. But
So
now,
now you're working on a musical book?
yeah, see, I finally had an idea for a book, which I don't think anybody's been done. Nobody's done before, that certainly is overlooked, and it has to do with hidden messages in films that people don't think as having messages. So it's
Oh,
called The Hidden Musical.
that's wonderful. I
Uh,
can't
it'll,
wait.
it'll probably take about 18, it's that's it. That's my last book.
We're here for it. I can't wait.
You're funny. And
What?
also just the whole what is the opposite of Frank Castle and but still doing 20th century American culture? And it's like the film musical is definitely as far away from
I love the range. Oh, I mean, that's amazing. I can't wait for it.
I also
well,
just
I
love
like
musicals.
sorry.
What's your go-to musical? Sorry to cut you off.
Oh no.
What's your like your favorite musical or opera?
I think of no, I'm not an opera person. I think of basically two kinds of musicals. The canon, and of the big ones, I have to say Meet Me in St. Louis. I think it is close to perfection. Minnelli is such an extraordinary visual artist. It's a film where if you take a say 4K or a high def version and you freeze it almost anywhere in the film, you have a perfect composition. Because he's moving actors through 3D space, but he has such a sensitive, exquisitely attuned sense of what he's doing that you can pause at any moment and it's organized and it's elegant. Anyway, so on the one hand, you have those kind of MGM sort of peaks, which I think are sort of peaks of cinema in general. But for me, I also love the forgotten musical, the low budget. I love a lot of those, especially the 40s. I mean, it's just moments from these things. I love watching Betty Grable at the end of Pinup Girl marching with 200 WACs, Women Auxiliary Corps. And it's 200 military women and one famous Hollywood actress, and they're all doing this march. And it's so 1944. You don't get that in American movies. It's almost surreal how just for 10 minutes, Betty Grable is going, right, march. And all these women are following her. And it's like, what is this country? So just as I was trying to understand the 70s by doing Frank, 70s and 80s, now I want to understand the 40s.
I love it. Love it.
It's my other favorite decade, I guess you can say.
I mean, it makes sense of just trying to understand who we are as a nation and political landscapes and everything, which makes so much sense for the I don't want to undermine it by just phrasing it as the career that you've built from your other books, this book, being a professor and everything like that. Like it's so much more than just a career. Like you've influenced
A
in
waste of time. Sorry.
I didn't
No.
say it. Those aren't my words.
I mean, it is an unusual academic thing, right? I mean, most academics are more focused on reaching academics.
But this is like right up our alley, so this is
No,
amazing.
that's not. I mean, I have no particular. I mean, to me, I'm interested in people who want to know about New York in this sort of through the lens of the Punisher, whether they teach somewhere or whether they, I don't know,
And to be able to tie
office.
those, and to be able to tie those two things together, the, fake bringing it to a reality and like looking through that lens, I think that's amazing. And
Thank
what
you.
you, Chad is reading the book right now, and then he's sending it to me so that I can read it.
Very
Unfortunately, he
slow
got
reader.
it first,
I
but
so appreciate it. Well,
I'm ex very
I
excited to
have
read it.
more access to our email. I might just have to buy the PDF so that we can read it side by side.
Yeah.
And
But
by
I think what you did is amazing and really unique, and I'm really
Thanks.
excited. Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on here to talk about this book, and I mean, not just your perspective, but so much of the history and where you are looking to go next with your works, especially in the realm of our society, the history of this country, and everything like that. I know that we really appreciate being schooled and educated by everything that you're doing.
Oh, you're too kind.
Now, but before we go, please tell our listeners where they can find copies of your book, both physical and digital, and also if they have more questions about you, your past works, your future works, and how they can reach you.
The publisher's Intellect. The book's A Cultural History of the Punisher, Marvel Comics, and the Politics of Vengeance. The cheapest copies, at least for a while, were on Forbidden Planet's website. I don't know if they've sold out, but they had some at a reasonable price. Amazon will at some point discount it because that's how their algorithms work, and you got to know like that 72 hours where it's suddenly affordable. But the main thing is through the publisher's website. I did sell some copies at the Mocha Fest just last weekend, and we had a book signing at Barnes and Noble about I don't know, 3 weeks ago. But it's hard. There's a lot of books out there, and just figuring out how to let people know about it is a challenge, especially outside, like I say, outside of comics.
We'll do our
But
best to get it out
you
there.
guys have been great, and really, in a way, I hope it's clear. I have no interest in sort of being like, oh, I'm an academic who writes on comics. I'm an academic, but nor am I just a fan, right? I mean, in other words, it's not, oh, I'm important. It's let's take ourselves and our history seriously.
Right.
And so it is a kind of, I think of it as a, it's a thick book, but I try not to write it as abstract. It's not meant to be an abstract or academic book, but it is kind of a serious book.
Right.
Anyway, that's the hope. Thanks for
I
letting me
mean,
rant.
no, my God, please rant all you want. I mean, seriously, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank
We,
you.
yeah, my God, that was so much fun. We got so much information, and hopefully our listeners did too. And hopefully, listeners, they'll go buy your book.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Have a good night. Appreciate you so much.
Appreciate it as well. Thank you.
Wow, that was such a fun interview, speaking with Kent. Dude is so smart and so aware of everything.
Yeah, I feel like maybe we were a little less educated for that conversation.
We tried.
We tried. We tried hard.
I feel like we had some good questions. We
Yeah.
pulled some things from the book, or from this most recent book. I mean, he's written several, but yeah.
Yeah.
Has yours shown up yet?
I think it came today, so I'm gonna start reading it
ASAP. He only sent us one initially for our listeners, which Chad got, and then he sent me one.
Yeah.
Because he's the best. He autographed mine. Yeah, with red lipstick. He just, like, kissed it.
No, but just seriously, kidding. Kent is fantastic. If you want to pick up the book, a couple of links are in the show notes as to where you can buy it, ways to reach them, everything like that. So check that out. Let's get into our first sponsor, which is our long-running sponsor of Raise Energy Drinks. You know, it's a great energy drink with 0 calories, 0 sugar, and 0 crash. If you don't like energy drinks, that's totally fine, because they have other things to choose from. Supplements, protein-packed desserts, just protein powder, things like that. Listen up, learn how to save 15%. We'll be right back with some Trivial Nerd Suit. What's up, nerds? I wanted to take a minute and talk to you about Raise Energy, an incredible energy drink that provides max energy with 0 crash. Raise Energy takes a giant leap of faith with instilling a high-quality formula to bring a powerful, yet sustained, energetic experience to help you push your workouts and focus to the next level. Perfect for anyone at any time, empowered by their Refresh formula technology, Raise Energy delivers a performance-enhancing energy drink that aids in multiple different categories that include targeted focus, better recovery time, improved clean energy levels, and a boost in stamina and hydration. But most importantly, every can of Raise Energy has absolutely 0 calories, 0 sugar, and 0 carbohydrates to give you a smarter and healthier option. So don't settle for an energy drink that contains more sugar and carbohydrates than you can count. Instead, head over to repsports.com. That's repsports.com, and use the promo code NERDPODCAST at checkout for 15% off your order. Or if you don't know what you want, go ahead and click the link that's in the description to get a $50 sample pack for free. All you do is you cover the cost of shipping. Again, make sure you use promo code NERDPODCAST at checkout to let them know that we sent you. Okay, nerds, it's time for some Trivial Nerd Suit. This week's question is for Jake, and it is provided by Marty over at DigiCat Tech. If you would like to submit a question to try and stump one of us, please reach out to us on Instagram or through our website. You can find links to that over at allthingsnerdpod.com or on Instagram as at allthingsnerdpod. And either send myself, Chad, a message to try and stump Jake, or vice versa for the other way around. Jake, are you ready for your question this week?
Ready.
All right. So this one is not guess the character, but guess the film.
Okay.
In this harrowing post-apocalyptic horror film, a bicycle courier emerges from a coma to find himself in an eerily deserted city devastated by a very contagious virus. On his journey for survival, he encounters a resilient woman, a determined cab driver, and his young daughter, all of whom are in pursuit of a safe haven that's been teased by a military broadcast. Their quest leads them to a supposed sanctuary overseen by a major, the leader of the military faction, with not the best of intentions for the future of humanity. What's the title of this movie?
Holy shit. Okay. What? Try again.
So, in this harrowing post-apocalyptic horror film, emerges from a coma. I struggled with that word earlier. Wakes up from a coma to find himself in a eerily deserted city that seems to have been devastated by a contagious virus. During his journey to survive, he encounters a resilient woman, a cab driver, and his young daughter. I'm assuming the cab driver's young daughter. All of whom are trying to find a safe haven that's been teased by a military broadcast.
This is a movie?
It's a movie.
Is it Resident Evil?
No.
All right, hold on.
I'm very surprised.
I'm surprised. The bicycle thing is throwing me off.
Like a bike messenger. Like a delivery person.
A bicycle courier in a zombie apocalypse. And a cab driver?
I think... Never mind.
Oh, God. Is it Zombieland?
No.
What? Oh, my God.
That's two wrong guesses. I'll give you one more guess. And then I'll give you a hint.
A bicycle courier. Bicycle courier. That's the only thing that's throwing me... Bicycle courier.
I think you're focusing on the wrong part of the question.
Right on. Bicycle courier. Just kidding.
Wakes up from a coma alone.
The only like zombie thing I can wakes up from a
I never said zombie. Post apocalyptic.
No, Is it 28 days later?
It is.
I didn't know he was a bicycle courier.
It's probably been a while since you've seen that movie.
A long time, but I don't. Did they mention that he's a bicycle courier in the movie?
I watched part of that movie once. Not out of like, oh, I'm not interested in this movie. I just like, it was just on at like a friend's house.
Yeah.
And I never saw the whole thing. So a lot of the further things I didn't get, but.
I think the coma thing kind of had me weird too, because The Walking Dead. Like, that's how Rick wakes up.
Oh,
but, like,
yeah.
He was a cop, not a bicycle carrier. So I'm like, bicycle carrier? And I'm just making excuses for myself right now. But I don't remember anywhere in that film. And it's been a long time since I've seen it. So maybe they did explain it. I don't remember anywhere in that film that they explain that he's a bicycle courier. So like that's what was throwing me off. I'm like, what are you, bicycle courier? Like, why is that why is that even a fucking
whatever. Could have been as a way to throw you off. It could have been like a blink and you miss it, because I didn't know that either. But knowing that it was a movie and that he's waking up from a coma to this post-apocalyptic nightmare, I was like, 20 days later.
That's a good watch too. I'm a little bummed I didn't get that on the first try, so that sucks. But I do like these the past couple weeks where we're doing the guess the movie rather than like, I like the way we started it too, like a mixture of those things. But
But it's nice to have that variation of like. Guess the character.
So it's not just like one constant thing. You know, I do like this. I am a little bummed I didn't get that on the first or second guess.
I'm surprised that you didn't, because you have told me that I should go back and rewatch this movie because I've never seen it all the way through.
Yeah, you get to see Cillian Murphy's dick.
Our listeners think that they can also stump us with movies like and characters.
Minded questions, yeah.
Yeah. Reach out to us. Tell us who you want to stump and send the question.
There, you want to know?
Will be something on our Instagram in the next like week or so. All right. Let's get into some nerd news. It seems very inappropriate that we were giggling at the start of this. It was from something else that happened, but we do want to announce and send out our condolences to his family and friends. But Chance Perdomo, who you would know most notably recently from being in Gen V, as well as the Chilling Tales of Sabrina, passed away this past weekend, reports are saying on Friday, the 29th of March. If you look on like IMDb and stuff like that, it says the 30th. But he did pass away from a motorcycle accident, which is, I mean, first off, super sad, very unfortunate. He was just
27.
To get some notoriety for his acting. Plus, Gen V is awesome, and they're working on season two right now.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I think we may, well, probably see him in season two, because I think they did some of that already. Yeah. My immediate thought would be that they maybe, I don't know if that's in poor taste, but either kill his character off or replace him. I don't know.
Yeah. Or maybe but it's very like sad. A black noir situation where then moving forward, he's just in costume. We don't know.
Yeah. Very sad. I mean, he's 27, just a kid.
So young.
I mean, yeah.
So yeah. Rest in peace, Chance Perdomo. And our condolences go out to your loved ones.
And it's always tough to, like, go into the next segment. But we wanted to start, we've made the mistake in the past of, like, talking about a bunch of happy things and then ending on a sad thing. And we're like, nah, we should do that the other way around.
Yeah.
So we started with something sad, and now we're going to talk about some exciting nerd news. So take that information as you will, and we will start talking about some exciting things that are coming up in the nerd news. This is one that I'm particularly excited about, especially after we went through the whole trial. We were all there in spirit with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Johnny Depp is making his return to acting finally after all of this shit happened. There are rumors that he's going to be in Beetlejuice, as a small role, but awesome, because we love Johnny over here at the All Things Nerd podcast. But also, he is starring in a movie alongside Sydney Sweeney called Day Drinker, and it is a supernatural thriller. So I'm very excited to see that. I grew up on Johnny Depp movies, and
I
would very much like to see him come back.
I would too.
Yeah.
Also, like we talked a little bit last week about the first couple of episodes of X-Men 97 and the immediate hate that it got from people that don't understand the X-Men. But what's really cool is that J.P. Karliak, I don't know if I'm pronouncing the last name correctly, but they're who voices Morph in X-Men 97, has kind of been clapping back at some of the hate, especially towards Morph. Being like, obviously these people that are throwing shade don't understand the X-Men, and claiming that they made Morph gay.
Yeah.
It's like shapeshifter, non-binary individual.
Saw Wolverine in the shower. I mean,
like,
I get it.
How, but like, it's also one, even if he, if, sorry, that wrong pronoun, because Morph is a non-binary individual. If they were to have romantic feelings towards male counterparts, first off, who cares? Like, it's good storytelling, and it's representative of people in society. Why is it a big deal? It's not. It's an animated show that's supposed to show kids that anybody can be more than what they're born as.
Yeah, and you probably, if you're upset by this, you maybe missed the fucking point. The X-Men are, or X people, X-Force are they are castaways. They're people that society doesn't accept, and they're finding their own way to make it. And if that to you is like, well, they're all gay, then guess what? You're probably right, and that's probably the fucking intent. And you just went like this. For those of you not watching, I did the motion of my hand going over my head.
Yeah.
So, you're dumb.
Very dumb. Plus, again, at the end of the day, like, it's a TV show that's very enjoyable. Why are you nitpicking it as a way to show your hatred? Like, just
because when they were kids, they didn't understand those innuendos that were still very present in that cartoon. Yeah, and as adults, they're very like,
present in the 60s for the actual comics. Like, come on. Just...
And
be better or shut up. Like,
other potentially, we say potentially because we don't know for sure, but it is rumored that Finn Jones is going to be returning as the immortal Iron Fist in the MCU. This comes from a post that Finn Jones himself put on his social media of a comic of Iron Fist. Very cryptic. That could just be him living his glory days as Iron Fist, but also maybe because we've heard rumors that Iron Fist is going to be in the next Shang-Chi movie, and that would be cool if we continue. You know, if we got Daredevil or Charlie Cox as Daredevil and Jon Bernthal coming back as the Punisher, and Jessica Jones
potentially Kristen Ritter.
As Kristen Jessica Ritter Jones. As Jessica Jones. I fucking flip-flopped that shit. then it is very likely that we will also see Finn Jones reprise his role, which would be dope.
Would be.
And
I like Finn Jones as an actor. I wasn't the biggest fan of the show, especially like season two.
Season one was dope. Defenders was dope. Season two, not his fault. But yeah, season two wasn't great.
Yeah.
What is the girl's name from that plays opposite to him in Iron Fist?
It up right now.
Because we talked about this, and I want to make a point to be like, that's dope. But I just don't know her name.
Jessica Henwick, who played
Henwick, Colleen. Yes. Yeah. So she called the Jessica Henwick turned down the role in Shang-Chi of Simu Liu's sister because she was hopeful for the return of Iron Fist in the MCU. And she was like, if I play this character, they're not going to cast me to play other role that Colleen, I was already in the MCU. Yeah. So now, if this happens, I think that would be a brilliant move on her part. So,
yeah. 100%.
Because then what was the movie she did instead? Short hair. I can't remember. Oh, it was
The Gray Man?
The Gray Man. Yeah. So, good move, Jessica.
Yeah.
Anyways, sorry, I got really excited about that. Because I remember, like, when we originally talked about it, we were like, oh, you turned down an MCU role? Like, fuck, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it's, like, kind of, like, playing. It's like, okay, damn, you knew what you were talking about. All right.
I see you. A nostalgic way, it's not so much nerdy, but something that we both grew up watching. But the news of this is not as exciting. Happy Gilmore 2 has a green light on it. I don't want to like start shitting over the fact that that's happening. Because, Happy Gilmore 2 is going to happen. I don't want to talk mad crap about it right off the gate. cash grab. What?
I read a little bit about it, and do you know who is playing Chubbs' son?
You sent it to me, so I
did.
Do.
I? Oh, yeah. Tiger. Okay. Tiger Woods.
That, I mean,
it's better than Chris Rock.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we,
no,
you and I
no
were
friends, Chris Rock. I
you
love
and I
Chris
were
Rock,
making but jokes, obviously not on camera for this, but just when we were talking, we were like, oh, who's Kevin James going to play? You know, like,
yeah.
That's a good casting for Chubbs Jr.
Yeah. I'm okay with it.
But yeah.
I haven't seen Tiger Woods act in anything, so, you know.
But we might get, like, another Kevin Garnett Uncut Gems sort of character.
Yeah, maybe.
Where you're like, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Another one is Ready Player 2, which is the sequel to, you guessed it, Ready Player 1, is finally in development, which is pretty cool. I don't know if you saw, I know you saw the first one, but to our listeners, I don't know if you have seen the first one. It is definitely worth a watch, especially if you're a gamer, a movie enthusiast. I mean, it is, it really, the cameos, and I mean, they're all animated cameos, but they're fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know anything else about the movie, so about the sequel coming out anyway, yeah. I'm excited.
I know that
about
they're
it.
Based on books.
I liked the first one quite a bit. So,
also, it's rumored that Boyd Holbrook, which you would know from like Logan, the latest Indiana Jones, the Dial of Destiny. There's one other big one that it's slipping my mind that I just saw him in.
Alien vs. Predator.
No, not that one.
Oh.
Anyways, Boyd Holbrook is rumored to be playing Harvey Dent in The Batman 2 from Matt Reeves. I don't hate the casting. I'm actually very excited and okay with the casting if this turns out to be true. But I'm
a pretty big fan of Boyd.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, we've just talked in the past about how like Josh Hartnett. Yeah.
That was also a rumor, so
yeah,
that he was maybe going to play Harvey Dent. And after seeing him in Oppenheimer as like a stuck-up kind of prick, I think he could play Harvey Dent really well.
Yeah, it like kind of cemented that like fan cast desire for him to be in that role.
Yeah, but I'll take Boyd. I like Boyd. I think he'll do well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And he kind of, you know, whatever. I don't want to go into it, but whatever. a short film, it's only like 7 or 8 minutes long, was recently released to YouTube. It's called The Spider Within. This is a in between Into the Spider-Verse and Across the Spider-Verse. It is a short film that takes place in the middle of that about Miles struggling with the stress of being Spider-Man, balancing school and failing grades and lying to his parents. And because of this, a paralysis demon manifests and kind of haunts him until he is able to not fully unload, but talk to his father about it and kind of like get that off his back. It was really cool for how short it was.
Yeah. I mean, what you kind of have to expect that from the team behind Into the Spider-Verse, Across the Spider-Verse. What's really cool that I didn't know, like I had heard some like people online mention the Spider Within. I didn't know anything about it, and then you sent it to me and I thought it was a trailer. And I was like, what is this? And then it, you know, it was like 8 minutes long and it's just like the full short film. But then I started like looking more into it, and it was in partnership with like a mental health awareness charity called The Hero Within.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
And the, you know, the thing is that everyone has things that, with their mental health, even Spider-Man. And it's really cool. And I'm pretty sure that all the profits, I know that it's just like streaming profits from like YouTube, creator funds online and stuff like that. But all those profits are going back into this charity, which is pretty cool for like mental health awareness, mental health assistance and funds, which is really awesome. I love this.
As cool as that is, you know what's not fucking cool? That Beyond the Spider-Verse was supposed to release on March 29th of this fucking year, and it got delayed. We were supposed to get that shit.
Carmichael. They took it from me. We were
supposed to get that yesterday. God damn it. That makes me mad. And now it's delayed until later this year to early 2025. Like, why is it delayed that far when it was supposed to release? It's done. The movie is done. Give it to us. It's my movie, and I want it now. Called J.G. Wentworth.
I have a structured settlement.
It makes me so mad. I want to see it so bad. They left it on such a big cliffhanger. I've watched it like four times.
That's a lot for you. As someone who likes to rewatch films, but you're usually like, I need like 6 months.
Myself a little bit.
Yeah, but
having a son, and trying to get him to watch cartoons that aren't Dancing Fruit on YouTube helps a little bit.
Okay, fair. Speaking of cartoons and animated things that aren't Dancing Fruit, Episode 3 of X-Men 97 came out this week. And what? There's two Jean Greys?
Yeah.
I mean, this episode was rad. I mean, I'm loving the new dynamic. I've seen online people complaining about the animation style being a little choppy. It reminds me
a little less voluptuous. I get it.
Yeah, a lot of decaking.
Bouquet?
Different kind of cake.
Oh, okay. My bad. You're the expert.
But I like the animation style. It feels like a nice like bridge between some of the like newer adult animated shows, kind of like Archer. Like, it has very much like an Archer animated vibe to it, but still being heavily influenced from like the 90s series.
This episode was pretty creepy too.
Yeah,
like, it was about Mr. Sinister, and he is like turning the mansion into basically hell, which was cool.
It was very cool. And also stealing Jean and Scott's baby to where they have to send him to the future with Bishop.
Nathan Summers.
Yeah. So, I love this. I love the show. People that are hating on it don't get it, or they're just dumb.
Don't watch it. Just don't watch it. If you don't like it, don't watch it. Nobody's forcing you to fucking watch it.
Just
if you don't like seeing Gambit in a crop top, fucking tuck your boner into your waistband and shut the TV off, okay? Yeah. It's fine.
Can I do the first part and keep watching it, though? Like, you know?
Yeah.
Because I enjoy it?
Yeah, cool. Just don't complain about it. Yeah, you're good. You can have it. You can like it. Don't be a fucking baby about it, you know?
And also, like, it's based in the 90s. Have you seen anything from the 90s? Every dude was wearing a crop top, especially the jocks.
Yeah.
That got off topic.
I mean, I think it was pretty on point. It needed to be said. I don't really mind like spicy clothing on men. It really doesn't bother me.
I was gonna say something to set it up for you.
I told you not to volley me, dude.
That's why I didn't.
I can spike it on my own.
I bet you can.
Speaking of spicy crop tops, have you heard of Cry Baby Craig's hot sauce? It's a pickled habanero and garlic hot sauce that goes on practically anything. Listen up, and we'll tell you more about it.
Hey, you nerds. Do you love spice? Supporting small businesses? What about enhancing the flavor of your favorite foods? If you said yes to any of those, our good friends over at Crybaby Craig's have the perfect solution for you. Crybaby Craig's is a pickled habanero and garlic hot sauce that goes perfectly with your favorite foods, adding the perfect amount of spice and enhancing the flavor of everything it touches. Started in Minneapolis by Craig back in 2012, Crybaby Craig's has become a Minneapolis and Minnesota staple in the sauce world. So head over to crybabycraigs.com and order yours today.
All right, friends, we are going to talk about Invincible Season 2, Part 2, Episode 7, now streaming on Amazon Prime. And as always, spoiler alert, because we're going to ruin shit for you if you haven't seen it. So if you haven't seen it, check back in later. I mean, fuck me sideways. This show does not let you down, ever.
No. Even ever. The slow episodes were like, oh, that was a slow episode. Still incredible.
Yeah. We don't want to spend a ton of time because we do have our interview on this episode as well. But there are some really big things that happen in this episode. One of those big things being the introduction of Anissa.
Yeah.
Quoting J-Lo here, if you know, you know.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it reminds you of when you were 16 running the block, you know.
My order at the bodega.
At your private school, you know.
Yeah. Your girls only private school. Anyways.
Fuck J-Lo.
Anissa has been introduced in the comics. If you do not know, Anissa rapes the shit out of Mark.
Oh.
And I mean that in the literal sense. I'm not making a joke about it.
We should have talked about that beforehand to not use the hard R word because it gets filtered from algorithms.
Oh, okay. We'll start over.
Yeah, we'll completely start over. Say grape.
I'll just say like takes advantage of in a
that works too
aggressive way. Wait, are we starting all the way over? You said okay. Okay, friends, we are going to talk about season 2, part 2, episode 7 of Invincible, now streaming on Amazon Prime. As always, spoiler alert. If you haven't watched it, check back in. Fucking hell, this show does not disappoint. Ever. Ever.
Even on slow episodes, where you're like, oh, that was a slow episode, but so much shit happens.
So much shit happens. And this is, we can't spend a ton of time talking about this, because we have a lot to cover, and we do have an interview on this episode as well. But one of the huge things that happens in this episode is that we get introduced to Anissa. If you know, you know. Quoting J-Lo here. At the bodega. Orange drink. If you know, you know.
Anissa from the block.
Yeah.
Only she honestly, probably though, came from a block. Unlike J-Lo.
In the comics, Anissa persuades Mark to have intercourse with her in a
non-persuasive way.
In a very aggressive way that he is not
keen to.
Privy to.
You know, like the fruit that grows on a vine for wine, Eminem, you can use that line. And keep going with it.
I love that you're using that name.
But yeah, there's a
yeah.
Because this is an adaptation.
It's an aggressive sex scene.
Yeah.
It's an unwanted, hardcore sex scene.
Not in this episode, but
no.
This yeah. character, Anissa, who is a Viltrumite, sees Mark's potential later in the story and is like, I choose you. And he's like,
yeah.
No!
Yeah, he's like, Pika, Pika! Because you said I choose you.
Yeah. Yeah. Pineapple, pineapple, pineapple. Fuck it's up that we're deal. Laughing about this, but
yeah,
we're just funny.
Well, and it's like such a wild thing to happen
in a comic. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
But at the time it happens in the comics, Mark is with Eve, so obviously it's not going to happen yet. I also don't know if animated adaption is going to include that snuggle struggle scene, but
sorry, it's not something to laugh about.
It's not. It's just a wild fucking thing to put in.
The topic of it is not something to laugh about.
No.
The way that we are trying to avoid saying the quiet part out loud and finding creative ways to do it is what's making me giggle.
Only because I used the actual word the first time around, and Chad was like, the algorithm will take this video down.
Yeah, we can't say that.
So we had to start over, and now I'm trying to find creative ways to
get the point across to where
yeah.
we also fall in line with the comedy improv tags that we have developed over the years. Whether you guys think that we're funny or think that we improv, we do. Literally, our things just say wing it. Except for the nerd news segment or our trivia. Anyways.
But it's brutal. And another big thing that happens is that she tells Mark after she kicks the shit out of him that if I'm not the one who's going to convince you, someone else is going to come here and they're going to be the one to convince you. And that in theory is, and I didn't look up his name, but he's that one. That remember that clip that I sent you like a yeah. while back?
Yeah,
that big ass dude with like the fucking like gauntlet on his hand or whatever. Not Thanos.
That almost destroys Mark and Eve.
Yeah, that's the other person she's talking about.
And don't we see a glimpse of him before he gets the augmented gauntlet in that fight probably. With Alan? Wasn't he the one that survives?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Again, we should have looked up that character's name, but neither of us have read the comics, compendiums, graphic novels, however you want to phrase it, because it very much depends on how...
About to, though.
Yeah. Both of us looked it up today and we're like,
I can't wait.
We keep seeing shit online where we're like, it's spoiling the future. Might as well read it for ourselves.
Yeah. I don't want to wait until the show is completely over to read the graphic novels. I'm just like, you know what? Yeah. That was my original take on it, but I'm like, nah, can't do it. I just got to dive in.
Yeah. That's where I was too. And especially with something in our honorable mentions, but I'm not going to wait for.
There is something really cool that I didn't mention to you prior to this, and I'll make it real quick, but I didn't know that Mark is kind of like Doomsday, in a sense. So every time Mark gets his ass whooped, because he gets the ever-living shit kicked out of him, like, every other episode, he gets stronger from it.
That explains so much also about Alan, the alien, because they used Viltrumite DNA to, like, enhance him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he got more buff after, like, being on the verge of death, which is why Optimus Prime, I don't remember the Viltrumite character's name, but it's voiced by Peter Cullen. why he like took him off life support. He's like, either you die or you come back stronger.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
And if you see the comic covers like online, because again, I haven't read them yet, but if you see the covers towards the later ones, Mark is a fucking unit, dude. He's not the skinny like kid he is right now. He's like fucking jacked. So
Okay.
Yeah, not jaked.
No, I not like a G unit, but like a little bit further down.
He's a unit. He is just a fucking refrigerator. And
is it raining?
It's because every time he gets beat, he becomes stronger. So all of these like ass whoopings that he's been taking the past like two seasons now, he's just been getting stronger and stronger and stronger, which is dope.
Yeah.
I read that today. Literally today.
That's so exciting. I hope that they explain that in the show. I would expect that they would, but who knows?
Well, they kind of do a little bit, because, like, him and Rex are talking or whatever, and Rex is like, I can't believe you grow your teeth grow back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, he's regenerating in that same sense. Like, every time he gets, like, fucking beat to shit, his body regenerates stronger than it was before.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of Rex... you know, he's still not like fully ready to go back out into the field because he's still recovering from having his brain blown out. But he still goes back out into the field. Mark does show up, but it's after the fight is won. And we like my theory about Rex's mechanical arm was partially right. It does have like a cannon in it that dispels his power, but I thought that that was going to be the thing that like shot his like explosive discs. Instead, it's just a fucking cannon. Yeah. But what was cool about it was he like did the Spider-Man like thwip, before the cannon like extended and then fired. And why is that cool?
Oh, okay. So
it's like a tease, you know?
Fucking A. So we talked about this when we were talking about this forever ago. When we, oh my god, I worded that so poorly. We talked about this when the voice cast came out for season two. And the Keaton, what's his first name?
Josh Keaton. Yeah.
Josh Keaton. I almost said Andrew for some reason. Josh Keaton, who voiced Spider-Man in the cartoons back in the day, was listed on the voice cast list. He has not shown up thus far in this season, but he is supposed to be in this season. In the comics, at the moment where, again, spoiler alert, at the very end of this past episode, episode 7, Sterling K. Brown's character has Mark's mom and his brother. In the comics, in this exact same instance, Mark goes to attack him, and he opens a portal, and Mark flies through it, yeeting him into Spider-Man's universe. And we're thinking that that is what's about to happen for the season finale of Invincible, which would be, like, I don't know how to express my excitement for it without sounding like a twat. It would be so fucking dope. What are you doing?
Sorry, I was trying to
weigh in here.
I'm very sorry. Yeah, I mean, because we, on top of seeing Josh Keaton's name show up on the voice actor list, but like he's a voice actor that's done a handful of things. Like he could have just been playing a random character. But then when you look at the teaser that they put out for Invincible season 2, where Mark is explaining to Alan how, oh, it takes so much time with like the animation and stuff like that. On the table, you only see like half of a cover of a comic book. where it's Invincible flying alongside Spider-Man. So that really heightened the speculation. And now that this scene that happens as kind of like the cliffhanger for the penultimate episode of the season, which leads to Mark being sent to an alternate dimension where Spider-Man is there, it's almost like this has to be what's happening.
Has to be.
Now, are they going to show Mark rush off and start flying and then tell a whole story of like the side characters and stuff? I say side characters, but like I'm invested in basically all these characters except for Immortal at this point in time. to fill the episode, and then the cliffhanger at the end of season two is him going through the portal, hitting Doc Ock, and then Spider-Man being like, "What was that?
Like, who just saved me?" Yeah.
Or is this entire episode going to be him in the alternate dimension working alongside Spider-Man trying to get home?
I don't think so. I think the first thing you said is probably going to be that.
I mean, realistically, yes, but like, yeah. It's my Spider-Man and I want him now. You know?
Like, yeah.
Call J.J. Jonasson.
That was good, but you're an idiot.
I stand by it. I was trying to figure out, I don't know why, the voice actor that played Spider-Man in, because you wanted to say Andrew, and I was like, is that Yuri's last name, who's been voicing Spider-Man for the most recent adaptations? It's not. That's what I was doing. I'm sorry.
Andrew Garfield, the only Spider-Man that matters.
The favorite Spider-Man that matters. There's others that matter. Anyways, doesn't matter. I guess we'll find out this week, and we'll tell you all about it.
Next week.
Another spoiler alert as we move on from Invincible is we saw Godzilla X Kong, you know, two Godzilla, two Kong, this past week. So a spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it yet.
Don't.
There's not a lot to spoil. It's it has the algorithm of bigger jaws and Dominic Toretto's white t-shirt never being soiled. There are funny moments.
It
looked cool.
The graphics are cool. The fight scenes are...
Planet of the Apes? I mean...
I was going to say, like, enjoyable, but, like, kind of... You kind of got to, like roll your eyes at it at the same time. Yeah, I mean...
I was waiting for one of the Kong-esque... assailants just be like, what a wonderful day, and then see the Statue of Liberty in the background, you know, and Mark Wahlberg being like, ah!
Go on,
the Godzilla Kong like team up movies have started to embrace the cheekiness and badness isn't even a word, of the old Godzilla movies, where like Godzilla uses his tail to like slither across the ground so that he can drop kick someone a mile and a half away. Like this is the fastest that we see Godzilla move on ground. We also see him swan dive off of a cliff so that he can start swimming faster. Like, what the fuck, man?
I didn't mind the dive, but the
dive at least was a little bit more logical instead of him suddenly being good. Like,
whoa. It just wasn't good. The movie wasn't good. And I'm not going to shit on it because
were trying not to do that too much, but it just wasn't good. And they're already making another one. Like, and it's like, you guys, and you guys, the premise, McFly.
The premise for it is the exact same thing, but more Godzilla focus instead of Kong focus.
Yeah.
So the next one, instead of Godzilla X Kong, is going to be called Kong X Godzilla.
Maybe. That's not.
That's me speculating, but the algorithm leads me to believe that I'm not that far off.
Yeah, it just.
Well, because this wasn't. Was Godzilla X Kong, a new empire?
It's such a dumb thing because the Godzilla was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Skull Island was awesome. Godzilla King of the Monsters, awesome. As soon as they brought in Kong and Godzilla, and it wasn't even them that made the movie bad. It was when they brought in Mechazilla, it made it so terrible. And they brought in that one guy from, that's gonna sound bad. Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things for that movie, and that whole like side.
I mean, she was in Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yeah, but it just didn't need that whole like storyline. Didn't need to be anything. Never needed to be there. It was such a pointless waste of time.
And also, who can forget the most iconic line of Godzilla versus Kong of, oh my god, they made a robot Godzilla. No, that's a Mechazilla. Like, come on.
Yeah. Ever since then, these movies have not been great.
I had a little bit more hope because it seemed like this movie was more about the monsters than the people. One, I was wrong. And two, bigger jaws.
Bigger jaws. Bigger jaws is kind of just the.
Yeah, it's the.
It's like every movie.
Yeah, it's the trope for every.
We can't really get away from it, unfortunately. But
you can do it better. Any final thoughts on
no
on this? Okay, cool. Then we should probably start closing out this episode.
But before we close out this episode, we are going to talk about our honorable mentions. Chadnheimer, what do you got?
Ooh, Chadnheimer. I'm okay with that one.
Yeah?
Infers that I'm smart and can get Florence Pugh. Neither of them are correct in real life, but I'll take it. That was a weird way to accept a weird nickname. My honorable mentions that actually stand out is I rewatched Logan. I've been going through all the old X-Men films, and then I'm going to rewatch the old Fantastic Four films and Deadpool, getting ready for...
All of them?
Like the Fox ones, yeah. From the Fox universe.
Like even the Miles Teller one?
Oh, I forget about that one. Maybe not That's all. Else? Maybe not all of them. sorry, not sorry. That movie was trash. But Logan is just such a great film. I love it every single time I watch it. And then just because we share one of our honorable mentions this week, I did start watching, it's a TV show on Netflix called Bodies. It's a British show. I've only gotten through one episode and I'm intrigued because there's like two storylines going and they're separated by like 80 years. I'm intrigued to see where it goes. And then lastly is the three body problem. Finished that. So good. It was so good. I really enjoyed that show. What about you?
We also watched the three body problem. And finished it. And yeah, that, I mean, we can talk about it for a second, but in a minute. And then we watched Warrior, the movie with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton, where they're like UFC fighters, but they're brothers and they end up fighting each other. It's a fun movie. There was another one that I remembered earlier and I don't remember it now. Remember? I told you. I was like, oh yeah, we also watched this. If I remember it when we talk about our honorable mentions,
I
I'll
also
say
don't
something.
remember what you said.
I don't remember what it was.
Sweet.
Realistically for us over here, oh, it was The King.
Oh yeah.
The King
Because
on
the
Netflix with
Joel Edgerton connection.
Timothée Chalamet. Yeah.
Yeah.
But realistically, the three body problem kind of ran this house for last week. That show is addicting and wild and insane. I mean, there is in is it episode three, the boat?
Episode 3 or 4, but yeah, it's like in the first half at least.
I won't spoil it, but holy fucking shit. Holy fucking shit. Think ghost ship. I spoiled it. Sorry.
Yeah. But what's rad about this show is it's kind of along the same lines as to why I really love the show The Expanse. Is because it's science fiction done with more science, which is awesome. It grounds the show in such a unique way compared to space operas, you know, in Star Wars, Star Trek, Rebel Moon, even Dune.
Don't put that movie in there with those.
Technically, it's considered like, you know, a science fiction space opera. It's not great, but you know, things like that, where this actually, they have science working with it. Also, why Interstellar is rad. The show is awesome. I'm so stoked. I bought all three of the books. I forgot to read the first book before season one came out. So I don't know where season one ends in correlation to the first book. But I will be reading those before the next season comes out. Hopefully the next season comes out. It hasn't been green. It's
I
been a
think it did
week.
pretty well though.
Yeah.
People were talking about it quite a bit. I think it did pretty well. So I assume we'll get another season.
I hope so. Anything else that you watched that needs to be mentioned to put on people's radars?
Nah, close
Yeah.
it out, dude.
Fantastic. Well, if our listeners like the show and they want to support us, the best way to do that is to do what, Jake?
Oh, give us your money.
Yeah, we would love that. The best place to do that is over at buymeacoffee.com/allthingsnerd. Let us know that it is this podcast and not our other podcast that sent you there so that you get member exclusive merch that relates to this show. If you don't want to give us your money on a monthly basis, we totally get it. Lame. But then you can just head on over to the allthingsnerdpod.com website. There's a link to our web store. Then it's like a one-time purchase, but you still get something out of it, which is pretty rad. If you don't want to give us any money, I mean, double lame. But just like, share, subscribe. In all honesty, like that helps us the most. Just getting the word out there, telling other people to check us out because you enjoy it, and because you think we're as funny as we think we are. Also, we want to give another huge shout out to Marty over at Digicat Tech, who helped us on our new website, has been doing a lot of stuff for our promotions. Fantastic. If you like other nerd podcasts, especially D&D, like a live play sort of storytelling aspect, check out Kobolds in the Basement. It's another All Things Nerd production. Most importantly, though, thank you so much for being a listener, being a fan. We love you all. And thank you for dealing with our off-the-cuff remarks and our what we think is hilarious humor. With that being said, this has been the All Things Nerd Podcast.